Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost of positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I'll piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers, eating fresh roads.
Welcome to episode 230 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes even the paranormal. How you doing there, honey?
Good. How are you?
What's so funny?
I don't know. The way you said that and the look you gave.
I'm having to remind myself that you're actually in the room with me.
Yeah.
How about that? Well, this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap. From twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Remember, handle all your preparedness needs yourself and everything you can't get. Go check out Heaven's Harvest. You're going to be glad you did. And remember, promo code PERMA will get you 10% off. And if you want a tip, a pimp, do it over there on the Fountain app. Listen to all your podcasts over there, even triple up the speed. How you like me now? And if you want to drop a derivation on a player, you know where to do it. Drop a SAT on a PIMP. And, you know, it was cool this last weekend to run across some people that have actually donated some money through the Fountain app. So, yeah, that was really cool to meet all of y'all this weekend. How you doing, baby?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I am. It's weird. I'm a little bit exhausted.
Yeah, probably a lot exhausted.
Yeah, this has been three solid weeks where, you know, I haven't taken a single day off. And, you know, I'm feeling it. You know, I'm not as young as I once was. And honestly, I need that time. So, you know, I'll get it sooner or later. But, yeah, it's good to be back home. So we'll go right into the farm news. So William, Emily, and the baby were here. And you got two extra days without me, which was kind of cold-blooded because...
Billy, what?
Yeah, well, see... Yeah. The day before you were with the baby and Emily and you went out baby toy shopping.
Yes, but
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, of course it's a thing. If you have a grandbaby, you go shopping for clothes and toys. That's what you do.
Yeah, well, she was spoiled rotten. And I'll tell you what, you can honestly tell the difference. For all you people out there that have young people or young children, whatever the case may be, go put them on the ground for a while and watch what happens.
Oh yeah. Well, we didn't just go shopping. We, Emily and I took her to the park and she was the happiest when we were just sitting on the ground at the park playing in the grass.
Well, there was another, time when we went to the park and it was over in, I can't remember the Bear Lake or something like that.
Beaver Lake.
Yeah. And, William and Emily wanted to recreate this picture that we did years ago when William was a baby and we were on top of Pikes Peak. Now on Pikes Peak, they have like three lakes up there. We were stationed at Fort Carson at the time and William was born out there. And it's one of my favorite pictures. It's tied. My two favorite pictures of all time is at your sister's wedding where you and William are sitting on the front porch of your mom and dad's place. And you buy those flowers and everything. Mm-hmm. It was just a beautiful picture. That one is tied with this one where I got William over my shoulder and I have this white snot rag or something sticking out of my back.
Well, it was a diaper rag, but the picture, my dad used to be a mechanic and he would carry a shop rag in the back of his his pocket. And so you, the reason why I took it is because like you had William and he was like looking over your shoulder, but you had a diaper in your back pocket hanging out like as if it was. And I just thought that was cute. So I took a picture.
Old box camera picture. And so they wanted to recreate that picture, but with me holding the baby. And I don't know how they're going to do it, but it was my birthday present. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So we had to find the right spot. So we took her over there and then. It wasn't a picnic or anything. I mean, we had already eaten and everything, but we just kind of laid there on the ground with her. And honestly, yeah. You can see a night and day difference when you have her on a rug or a carpet or something like that in your house, as opposed to outside. She is absolutely no whimpering, no anything. Yeah,
she just sits there and plays in the grass. She doesn't even have to have anything to play with.
Yeah, she's just absolutely just taken with what's around her.
Yeah.
So, folks, I mean, it goes to show you. I mean, I was really, really paying attention. So there was another lady that talked about how they called them runners. She worked with special needs kids and how they would have them in these classrooms and how they would constantly have to chase them. They would find them outside, you know, they would disappear or run out or whatever. They'd always go at the playground, and then they put grounding mats in all these special needs classrooms, and they would have these kids take their shoes off, and they noticed night and day behavioral differences.
Yeah.
So here it is. We have kids in these schools right now that there's a Christian school down the road where they actually have a 5G tower that is located. I mean, I'm sure I heard this is happening in all schools, but they have this cross out in front of it right alongside I-26. And the top of the cross is a 5G tower. And right at the base of it is a school, a Christian school. And I mean, these kids are in there getting Kentucky fried and everybody's got their shoes on. Nobody's grounding. I mean, you know, it's crazy, but folks, I mean, think about this stuff. I mean, I tell you this stuff because it honestly is legit. I can see the night. And I mean, did you see it as well? You can see a difference in her behavior.
No, I do see it. And like, even when she was here and I would take her out on the front porch and just walk around the front porch with her. And she just like, I would have my, like my socks off so that I was grounded on the front porch, just holding her. And she just,
well, that means she was grounded too. I mean,
right,
yeah,
right. That's what I mean.
Yeah. So,
yeah, she loves to be outside. And yeah, there's a night and day difference when she's grounded and when she's not.
Yeah. So, for all you kids, all you folks out there that have kids that maybe a little bit, I mean, try these folks. Look, I'm not trying to push products. I never have and I never will. That's never going to be something I'm into. I'm telling you, this stuff works. I mean, if you have a house that has carpet or whatever the place, have these spots. I mean, even if you're sitting there watching, you know, TV, working on your computer, get these grounding mats. If you're at work, whatever the case may be, you can plug it into any outlet. But there's so many of us that, you know, there are people with a lot of careers that can't get away.
Right.
So I remember there was a place in Independence, Missouri. It was called Unilever. Well, it's well known. And they made all like the salad, the wishbone salad dressing and stuff like that. And I was trying to think, you know, because I've worked in a lot of production throughout my career as a industrial journeyman electrician. I've worked in a lot of places. I mean, you name it, man, from dog food factories to pharmaceuticals. If there was one really good thing about that job is that, well, not to mention there was a lot of good guys you work with and gals. In addition to that, you worked in a lot of different places, and most of them were almost always like some kind of facility, some kind of production facility. And I was thinking, man, even if you're working in a place like that, now I'm going to speak directly to you people that work in these production lines and stuff like that, because I've worked in a lot of those places. I've done a lot of electrical work, even at, you know, Ford, GM, you name a car plant, man, I've worked at it. And I was thinking, you know what, you always have, even though you may not be able to take your shoes off, there are things around you that are grounded. It may be an I-beam. It might be a post coming up out of the ground. You may not be able to put a mat out there. And in a lot of these places, there ain't no way they're going to ever allow you to take your boots off.
No, but like that, who was it that put like a grounding mat at the computer
right
where they worked? So even if they had the ability to put the grounding mat like at the station where they worked, maybe.
Right. Right. That would be another sensible way of going about it. So you're going to have to think, you know, put on your thinking cap, y'all. I mean, if you're working at a desk, you're around computers, man, you have got to get yourself grounded. But it was really, really evident when you see a small child and you see the night and day. I mean, she's not by nature I mean, honestly, she's a great baby.
Yeah, she's a happy baby anyway. It's not like she was just miserable the rest of the time, but you see a big difference just by being grounded outside.
You take her outside and you see her grounded, and I was like, man, you know, I got to tell everybody else about that. I didn't intend to spend so much time on that, but yeah. But anyway, while William was here and Emily, man, I couldn't be more proud of him. I mean, he's a dad, you know, he runs his own businesses and, you know, he does his own thing. But in addition to all that, he's in the middle of doing 75 hard and, you know, knocking out consultations, coming back, still doing his workouts, the whole nine yards. Man, it's tough to do. And, you know, he has, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody with more fastidious compliance.
Yeah.
To a tough regimen like that.
Yep.
Most people would quit.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Especially being on the road, and he was doing, you know, a couple consultations here that weren't close. So he'd have to get his 2 45-minute workouts in at some point while trying to drive back and forth, and he did it.
Yeah, he was doing it. And it's a tough thing to do. I mean, he sat out there, chopped wood, put it in the thing. Yep. I mean, he's got his wood for the winter. Hopefully he's still on it when it come back later on for a birthday, man. Maybe we can get the rest of that thing filled up with wood. I mean, good night. But I just got back. What was it? I flew in yesterday, was it? Yeah, the days are kind of running
yesterday,
on.
Yesterday, Sunday?
Yeah, I flew in yesterday. I finally got back afternoon. Man, I'll tell you what, y'all. Man, I first of all, I hate flying in the first place.
Yeah.
And they made me miss my flight the first time out because I wouldn't go through that little
scanner.
I wouldn't go through there. And the guy's like, you sure you don't want to go through that scanner? And I'm like, man, hit me with your best shot. And I'm telling you what, these dudes, man, they milked me down. I mean, he took his time downstairs, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And you could tell he was being as professional as a person could be in something like that. But I'm like, come on, man, really? How much time do you need down there? Yeah,
really.
And yeah, running. I mean, it's so invasive and so over the top that honestly, I think I don't know why we subject ourselves to this.
I'm at the point where if I can't drive there, I'm not going because I can't stand flying.
I'm about to that point right now. I've been at that point. The only reason I even, you know, these are my friends. And I'm pretty much of the mindset, at least right now, I'm never going to say never. But, man, I was sitting here as I was going through this. They made me miss the first flight, and then they got me a later flight. And that ended up being like, you know, 45 minutes later. And then, of course, it was like the enemy was throwing every single stumbling block in the way to keep me from getting to this thing. And I finally got there. And then now the trip coming back, it wasn't as bad. I guess maybe you know, if you fly out on a Wednesday or something, maybe you don't deal with all this, but
yeah, it's probably less. Also, when was the holiday was the week before that, wasn't it? So it wasn't a holiday weekend.
No, it wasn't anything like that, but it was a real mess. I mean, getting on a plane these days, I don't know how Joel does it.
No,
I don't know how Joel does it, because I'm sitting here. Okay. And then I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so you're going through my bag. You're going through all this stuff, my carry on. Right.
Right.
But meanwhile, 95% of all the luggage that goes underneath that plane, nobody ever checks.
No,
it doesn't hit a scanner. They don't do anything with the luggage.
They do check it because I've had
them spot check stuff.
Yeah. Right. They spot check it. They don't check every single bag.
No, most of it. It was reported a while back. I think 95% of all the bags that go underneath that plane go unmolested. Nobody checks them. Nobody scans them. Nobody does anything. So why couldn't a quote terrorist have use their phone to set off a bag that's underneath? I mean, yeah. Come on, man. It's just slave training up once. And then everybody's forgotten about the reason why we now take our shoes off, too, because of the so-called shoe bomber.
Yeah.
And then there was a lawyer on the plane. I think his name was Craig Haskell or something like that, who blew the whistle on what actually happened, how some guy got him on the plane. And it was a scam up one side, down the other. And then Michael Chertoff, all of a sudden, the guy who's basically making all the money on these scanners. I mean, folks, it is a grift up one side, down the other. Everything is a scam. It's a lie. And every time I have to go through these things, I'm like, man, am I the only one here that awake?
Probably. Billy, people were just, don't you remember COVID? Like, people were getting in line for the vaccine just so they could go on vacation again. They're like, yeah, I'll take it just as long as I can, you know, get back to going on my vacations.
Yeah. And we knew a number of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, man, I just want to go on vacation. I'm like, really? Yeah. Really?
You're going to get that stuff injected. You're going to take it just so you can fly again.
An experiment. And then you don't smell a rat when they're offering burgers.
A free donut.
A free donut. I mean, come on. But yeah, anyway, it's all slave training. So every time I go through this, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I'm like, man, every single thing from taking off your shoes, that was a shoe bomber. That was a scam. Proven. Craig Haskell. I think I got his name right. He blew the whistle on that. About what really happened on there. Most people don't know about it. Of course, Fox News and MSNBC and all the other prostitutes will never cover it. But every time I end up getting on a plane, I'm going to make them, I'm just going to leave extra early because I'm like, I ain't walking through your scanner, man.
Right.
And, and then that was another thing. One of the ladies at the TSA, she was very nice and polite. It was a young lady. And she says, why don't you want to go in the scanner? I said, if you knew what I know about those things, you wouldn't even be anywhere near that thing. And she says, really? Can you tell me about it? And it was about that time her boss comes over and he's like, I said, well, I wish I had time, but it looks like they're going to work me over. So, it's all slave training. Like I said, I mean, so what if somebody put a timer on there that went off? I mean, your bag that you checked. I mean, come on, man. It's the biggest scam ever. And then I asked the guy, I said, let me ask you, after he was done working me over, I made sure I waited till he was done. And I said, let me ask you, how many terrorists have you caught doing this?
What did he say?
He said, well, we've caught some people. I said, yes, really? Yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. Huh? You mean to tell me? Okay. And that wasn't, let me guess. They were working for the FBI, right? Yeah. So I didn't say that part, but I wish I had. So anyway, finally get out there to Midwest Preparedness Project. Folks, I mean, these are people, I've said it before, these are folks that I've known, many of which, the ones that run the thing and a lot of people that are involved in it. I was involved in the preparedness group back there from way back. And these are, man, there's something really, really special going on in Kansas. And I don't know how many times these guys probably heard me say it. I said, I don't know what it is, but there is something about this Kansas group that is unlike any other. I mean, I've done these things all over and I've never seen anything. I've never seen a more tight-knit group than the one in Kansas. I've never seen a group where everybody's getting along. I'm sure they have their differences and everything, but I'm hoping to have Tag on from Life Done Free. He and a number of others are very instrumental in weaving this sort of tapestry that they have right now, and it is the only way. There's not a cooperative community that works. There's not one. The only way these things work is if everybody has their own fiefdom and if everybody has their own thing and you work together as a mutual assistance group. And I don't think anybody does it better than Kansas. I really don't think anybody out there does it. I mean, I don't even think there's a close second when it comes to how they do things. The camaraderie, they get together very often. I think at least once a month to work on one person's project or another. I mean, they literally, Tag was telling me about how they put up they put up a dude's house in a weekend.
So they do have week or monthly meetings then?
I'm not sure how that works. I'm going to get him on the show for sure.
To explain it.
And explain it, because so many people out there are trying to find community, or they feel like they have to sign up, or that they have to get on a big piece of property with everybody else. And that is the worst way to do it. You and I know from experience. No,
yeah, I agree. But like if everybody has their own, but are they pretty close? Because, I mean, Kansas is pretty, how close are they?
Well, I mean, it's relative because out here, an hour away in terms of distance
right.
is not the same as it would be in Kansas. Because, no, but, you know, hour away could literally be as a crow flies 10 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be a short distance, but, you know, you generally go a mile a minute out there. But out there, everybody's accustomed to having to drive maybe an hour or two, you know, so it's not a big deal. And everybody accounts for that. I don't think there weren't too many people that were within. Everybody at this thing was probably, for the most part, had to drive at least an hour to get there. But as you well know, that's not uncommon.
No.
back when you were working in Kansas, I mean, it was an hour each way.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's times, I mean, like in Texas, you know, it was 2.5 hours each way. Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon in places like Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, Nebraska. I mean, a lot of folks don't understand that, but for those folks, they're other people would think, well, they're really spread out, but they don't understand how people in the Midwest.
Yeah. You can get on and move right along on the interstate.
Yeah. It's or the highway or whatever you have available to you. So distance is not that big a deal, but man, I've never seen, that's why I really want to get tagged on here because so many people are out there trying to, they're so perplexed. I mean, we get the emails. I get them all the time. People are so perplexed. Like, you know, man, I got community, but they're this far away or whatever. Well, we're going to provide some solutions. Hopefully I can get him on this week. I know it's kind of a last minute thing, but if he can swing it, I'd really love to go live with him on YouTube because I know YouTube is going to tank it for the most part, but I want him to be able to field questions and how they are able to do it because they have got one incredible thing out there. So it was cool to hang out there with all my friends out in Kansas and all the new ones I met. And, you know, I was looking on where I get a lock on some of these breast birds. I was calling them breasties, but they're breasts. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the French, yeah, you just got to throw another E in there just to confuse it, brother. But anyway, yeah, that was cool to hang out there and get a lot of locks on certain things and, you know, talk about some business development stuff in the future and a lot of other really cool things. But it wasn't a, it was a camp out. So, and, you know, they had a fire. They played this conflicted game. They do things within this group and I think are fascinating. Like there's a game called Conflicted. I think that's the name of it. Where basically you're given a scenario, there's no right or wrong answer, but it's designed to make you think about what you would do in a crisis situation. And they had this big fire and everybody's situated around it and they're breaking out questions. And, you know, I weighed in on a couple and everybody else did too. And you even had young children around the fire doing the very same thing. And Patrick, man, there was never been a better game show host than Patrick. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, this guy, he really knows how to pull a thread in the right way and really tease out some tough questions and answers out of people. So Bobby, Tag, you know, man, these guys were on their bicycle. Like, and here's another thing I pulled away from them. And it was funny because you've heard me talk about it, I don't know how many times, like in the preparedness circles, everybody's talking about like you put on your backpack and you walk out of there. Mm-hmm. And I always said, what have I said for years? Like, why would you walk out of there? Why wouldn't you use a bicycle?
Yeah.
If you had to, how many years was I say that?
Yeah.
A soldier with a 35-pound pack generally will go 8 hours, will take 8 hours to go 25 miles. Do you have any idea that same soldier with a 25 or a 35-pound pack could go with a bike?
Right. Yeah.
Well, these guys, it is pretty doggone cool because they got bug out bikes.
Huh.
And they're all those e-bikes or scooters. Man, I was on this scooter. I about killed myself. Patrick let me drive. And folks, this is hitting into that preparedness realm. So if you have to get out of a place, maybe a scooter works for you. Maybe an e-bike works for you. I mean, every situation is going to be different. Let's say you're in a city, but I'll tell you what, those little scooters, Michelle, that sucker.
So that a scooter, what do you mean by a scooter? Like a little things, moped or no, an e-bike?
No, no. One guy had an e-bike.
Right.
And he let me ride it. And that thing was like, okay, you know, for the longest time I've been wanting one of those.
Where are you going to ride it?
Well, I got a plan. Don't worry about that just yet. I got to
straight up the mountainside.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm wondering. Anyway, that's kind of on the back burner right now because they got some other products. Like, does it have a wagon on the back of it? I mean, doing farm tours and stuff like that could be a game changer and then put you on the back of it. Yeah, that might be interesting. You know, without having to go break the bank, you know, people buy these side-by-sides, man, and they spend a fortune for them, man. We're not the Rockefellers, man. And I'm not going to tear up my pastures.
No.
Mm-mm. Ain't going to happen.
No.
So it's just not going to happen. So, you know, we do everything by hand, and it's got to be that way because it's, you know, plus it's a workout. But anyway, they're bug-out bikes, and they have like these little, you know, them little scooters where you got handlebars and you can kind of kick it and push it along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got them now where they're electric. This one Patrick has, this sucker goes 65 miles an hour. Yes. And these things these days will go up to, I think they, I could be wrong, man, but I could have swore he said these things will go up to like 60, 70 miles.
That is ridiculous.
On one charge. But think about that from a preparedness standpoint. If you got an e-bike, first of all, it's very silent. It's very, very quiet. And you had to get out of your place. And okay, so let's say you got a truck, whatever the case may be. I mean, two is one, one is none. You dig. But what I loved about what they were using these things for, I mean, these things will go across grass, the scooters, the whole nine yards. They will go across grass. But the bike, I was like, okay, in terms of utility, man, that bike is pretty tough to beat, but it doesn't go nearly as fast. But depending on your needs, whether you found yourself, let's say you had a fallback position and you needed to get away quick and silently, nobody's ever going to hear you on these things.
Yeah.
And so Bobby was telling me about how they're using them in Ukraine, or the Russians were using them for something or another to drop landmines. I can't remember what, but I mean, in terms of a preparedness backup, I know one of the things I hated about the preparedness world, as you well know, is that in the old days, everybody was addicted to their gadgets.
Yeah.
And it's what I hated about it.
Yeah.
And that's why I got out of preparedness exclusively, because I'm thinking, okay, so you got some storable food. Is anybody going to talk about growing food?
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of them, it was a fad when, and it always happens when a Democrat's in office.
Yeah.
Preparedness people come out of the woodwork. Now everybody wants to be a prepper. I hate anything that ends in ER, but I'll just say it that way. And then the second a Republican gets in.
Yeah, they all go right back.
And let Trump, I mean, I don't, who even knows? I mean, as if there's a, as I said before, you know, these elections are really nothing more than picking out the color of the train that's about to run you over. So, I mean, it doesn't matter who's in office as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, if you're one of those people that fall in that left-right paradigm, and it just blows my mind. We saw it for years. We've been at this for well over two decades.
Yeah.
And every time there's a Democrat, saw it all the way back with Clinton. Every time there's a Democrat, everybody wants to prep. Every time there's a Republican, you act as if the Republican's your friend and you don't. So if Trump gets in there, you're going to see, I guarantee you, this homestead tsunami that Joel's talking about is going to come to a trickle. Yeah. I guarantee it. It is a fact. And I got news for you folks. This thing's coming apart no matter what. So I'm spending more time in this segment for a reason, y'all. There was one other thing that happened, and I was kind of debating on whether or not I even wanted to talk about it here. And some of the people that were at that festival are almost certainly listening right now. And there was one of the last things was myself and Darren from Hacks from the Homesteader did a little, a chicken processing, what they call the strong bond method. Basically a method Darren and I came up with processing chickens, where you can put a whole lot of them in a small space. And we came up with it a long time ago. So everything was great up until that point, and it was great even through it. But there was something that happened, and like I said, I debated as to whether or not I was going to say anything, but there were some spiritual issues that unfolded. You know, right when I hit the stage with Darren, moments before, there was one lady, I don't know her name, didn't see her before, didn't see her after. And she was very strange. And I'm being very polite, and I'm being quite polite when I say strange. Obnoxious beyond anything I've seen in recent time. And I live near Asheville. So that's saying something. This woman was unbelievably obnoxious. Anyway, we had these weird things go on, and this is where I'm going to kind of delve just a little bit into the esoteric. Anybody that was there realized that we kept having these, nobody before us had any problems with microphones, with anything. They were all charged, no problem. One of the telltale signs, honestly, if you've been at this for a while, is within the spiritual warfare thing, is that it's not uncommon to have a lot of electrical problems. A lot of the people that we know within this space have dealt with this sort of thing. And all of a sudden, we kept having them, mics for no reason, just turning off. Everything's functional. And then when it was all over, they were working fine. And this lady, come to find out later on, she was a witch, legit witch, and was like spending her time back and forth from the Renaissance Festival to there. And Patrick ended up telling me, he's one of the organizers of it, Patrick Barnes. He's like, man, I know we were, now he's one of those people that is like William, who can, has that spiritual gift of knowing when somebody's up to no good. And when he said it afterwards that, man, we were under spiritual attack. I know people have said it before and you just, some people might dismiss it, but I was like, oh, okay. I didn't put two and two together until I got home when I was able to unpackage everything. And I was like, man, I couldn't understand it. But I mean, folks, do you have any idea how many times I've taught this sort of thing?
Yeah. And you had you were dealing with a lot of anxiety also, right?
Right. So before then, before I got on the stage, I want to make absolutely sure I give the people my best. And so I lay down, I make sure I'm grounded. I spend some time grounding. I quote Psalm 91, do all that good stuff. And, you know, a number of other verses and chapters. And I just kind of get my head right, make sure, you know, pray the Lord that, you know, I go out there and do the best I can. Well, I should have rebuked those nasty things that were going on, because while it was going on, I had this unbelievable anxiety that only happens when I know we're under attack.
Right.
And I should have rebuked it right on the spot, and I didn't. And I was like, that was a lesson I hope I'd never have to learn again, because this is the second time this has happened to me. Folks, I am not a person that gets nervous in front of crowds. I know public speaking is a phobia for a lot of people, but it's not for me. And I do it often, and I'm not at all shy or nervous or whatever else fundamentally like most people tend to be. I mean, yeah, you got the respectable butterflies in your stomach because you want to go out there and, you know, make sure you give these folks a good job. But I was being spiritually attacked, and I'm pretty well convinced that there was a few witches in that audience that didn't want to. And Patrick said he observed it right after Darren started to pray. I mean, before we started processing these chickens. And so, truth being, it was, that was a lesson I learned. I mean, there was a number of lessons there, but you're always going to have these people. Now, I ran into it before over at Mars Hill University, which I wasn't shocked there because, I mean, you got a whole lot of Wiccans in there, and I made a lot of enemies online with some of the things I've said. When I say enemies, I'm talking like the good kind of enemies, the enemies you want. And so, I was being spiritually attacked there, and it took everything. This woman was so obnoxious. I was almost disappointed in myself. I had to close my eyes for a second, literally. And I think people in the audience could sense it, that I had about all I could take from this woman. I mean, it was, and why I picked her out of that audience to be up there, she was just so, seemed enthusiastic at the time. I don't know what I was thinking picking her, and she just derailed the whole thing. So my apologies to the folks out there that felt like you didn't quite get all of it out of there. I know she was very distracting. And if I'm ever in that position again, I promise you, I will hurt some feelings. I know that I'm a guest there, but when I feel like there's something, because I knew there was something very, very wrong with that woman, and a number of others did too. And then when it was all said and done, I didn't see her again.
Yeah.
So it was her and somebody else with her. And like I said, I won't tell you how I know, but she's a dyed-in-the-wool witch, and there's going to be people at these gatherings that try to throw smoke out there and destroy things. So I will rebuke it next time, and I'm not going to find myself in that kind of position. So with that said, so what did we do today? We went out to Janet's to go flip those piles.
Yep. Combined them, and so they should be good to come to ambient temperature and then to cure for a little bit.
Yeah, so we'll leave them out there. And what I'm talking about for the Homesteaders United gathering, we made a couple of compost piles. Well, I'm just not going to just leave them there, so we had to go back, and this was the last flip. We combined them, put them together, covered them up, put all the stuff in there, and we'll have a video on that here before too long. And, we'll keep you through all the way through the process, show you how it goes. I mean, it's not rocket science, folks, but I know that everybody's intimidated. Not everybody, but a lot of folks are really intimidated by composting and stuff like that. So, we're going to show you this thing all the way through and show you how well this stuff works and how easy it can be, because right now, in light of all the things going on, man, you really need to know how to produce your own fertility. All right, coming up soon, y'all, pig processing out there with Sow the Land. Permapastures Farm once again is doing our annual pig processing out there. So the land, that's going to be October 25th and 26th and November 15th and 16th. Y'all, we're going to go into some serious detail. This isn't going to be one of those ones where I can make you conversational, but when you walk away from something like this, you're really going to feel as if you really know what you're doing. You're going to be able to put your hands on it the whole nine yards. You're going to get fed, and it's going to be a good time. And it always is. Every time you go out there, Jason and Lorraine, boy, they've done so many classes right now that they really have it down to a science. So we're going to be able to do all that out there, and we're going to show you all the way how to do it. So do we have a link in the show notes for that, or is it at the website?
Yes, we do. Well, we've got both. There's one in the show notes, and then we have a link on our website that'll take them to his website where they actually will get more information and sign up for it.
There you go. All right, y'all, Redemption Shield, I've been talking to you about this grounding a while ago. The idea is not to sell product, y'all. It really isn't. I don't bring anything on this show. In fact, there's one potential advertiser that might be getting a little bit frustrated with me after a while because I still haven't done a video, and I won't. If your product doesn't work and you send it to me, well, or let's say I reached out to you and you sent me your product and it doesn't work, I'll send your product back. But if you think I'm just because you sent it to me, I don't care what you say it costs, you ain't getting on the show if it doesn't work. So I'll send it back to you, man. But one thing I am sure of, and I told you in the beginning of this program about my granddaughter, Redemption Shield, man, get those match, y'all. They work. Promo code PERMA will get you 10% off, or I should say discount code PERMA will get you 10% off. All right, so let's go ahead and get into the good news. So check this one out. Switching off, now you could say this is a good or bad news, but switching off inflammatory protein leads to a longer life by 25%. And this is in mice. Now check this out. This protein is called IL-11. And when they turned it off in mice, they found out that they basically lived, 25% longer is significant, you know, in a mouse. But here's why I'm saying this is potentially not good news. They don't tell you, I mean, what is the behavior of that mice? What did they lose in turning off that protein? You know, are you going to live 25% longer, but you're a freaking robot?
Yeah. What's your quality of life going to be?
Now, that's a double-edged sword with the biohacking that I do and you do and the things we talk about is because now it's one thing to go out there and say, hey, go get morning sun, do your deep breathing, get grounded, do all these things. Those are natural things. And now some of these biohackers have already taken it. That one guy, oh my goodness, like he's a multimillionaire, probably the most tested guy, Brian Johnson, that's his name. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Now he and that other guy, Dave Asprey. Yep. So what did they do? It moved from doing all these things that will improve your life. And this is exactly what I was afraid of in this mice experiment. This is why I'm saying this is a good news, bad news kind of thing, is because they both have taken this experimental, what do you call it?
I don't remember what it was, but it was, I don't remember what the term is, but it's crossing a line. When you start manipulating genetics on a certain level, like it's one thing to go out and ground, get sun, get morning sun. But when you start manipulating genetics and DNA, I think that might be taking it a little too far.
It's one thing if you're messing with your epigenetics, which means it's basically not going to express itself. Let's say you have no business eating wheat or glyphosate, which nobody should probably eat. And let's say that gene stays turned off as long as you have certain lifestyle and behavioral choices, you know, that's one thing. But that study in mice, like I said, I'm like, how long before? Okay, so they did that in mice. They lived 25% longer, but you can't talk to a mouse. What was this? There's so much left out of that article not talking about.
But also, what else did it do? Because genes aren't just... they affect other things. It's not like it just affects this one component. Like you start manipulating and it has downstream effects. So what else happened? What else changes?
Right. Because I mean, like I said, nobody's talking to a mouse, Nobody's saying, hey, Mouse, well, what about this? What about that? You know, and you could already see, I'm like, okay, they're doing it in Meister over here leading us out there. You got Dave Asprey doing it. You got Brian Johnson doing it. And then there are no long-term studies. These guys basically chose to be test mice.
Right.
And what's going to happen? I mean, what do you become? You're so afraid to die. I mean, that you're willing to do all this stuff. I mean,
it's not only that they're afraid to die. They've also put out that they're going to live to a certain age.
Right. Right. You're telling me as if you have any say on the matter. I mean, yeah, there's certain things you can do, but what if you got hit by a bus?
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, an anchor falls in your head. I mean, who even knows? I mean, you're doing all these things and you're playing with things that you don't even understand. And I think that's a little double-edged sword, but I wanted to let you know, I'd say that's good news in that you're aware of it. But as far as good news overall, I'll leave you to be the judge of that. All right. So I brought this one up because I know you're going to be on the show. Dogs are a part of the family, but they have a different digestive system. Do you know which people foods they can eat? All right.
Meat.
You're going to say meat? Well, according to this article, they can eat carrots, apples, white rice, dairy products, peanut butter, eggs, watermelon, salmon, blackberries, green peas, and sweet potatoes. But what do they feed sled dogs?
Like remnants, like fish, parts of fish left over from like fishing, probably guts from their hunting.
Not probably. That's what they feed them.
Yeah, it's not the steak that they just, that's for sure.
Technically, they can eat those things, but should they? I mean, when you talk to people like Dr. Wallach, and he's a veterinarian and a naturopath doctor, and he had talked about how, okay, and that's why we started feeding our dogs the way we do, is they are natural. They are carnivores.
But
if anybody should be on a carnivore diet, it's a dog.
Right. But if you like that, I have seen so many vets recommend a lot of carbohydrates for dogs because they say that they have adapted to digest them. But if you look at a lot of the health conditions that our dog has, it's like, I'm not sure that all these sweet potatoes and rice are good for these dogs.
They may eat them on occasion and stuff like that. Like a dog will go out and eat grass when it, you know, needs to throw up or whatever, get something out. But by and large, I mean, these are animals that were adapted. If anybody, I mean, everybody makes a pretty good case for a carnivore diet in the human. Well, if anybody needs to be on a carnivore diet, like I said, take the biggest high performance dogs on the planet.
Right.
They ain't feeding them beans and rice, man. Yeah. They're feeding them. But for all of you people that do feed your dog people food, I figure that'd be good news for you. All right. So another dog story for you, honey. Dogs saving the food supply. Trained dogs used to sniff out disease destroying citrus trees in Florida, California, and Texas. So, all right. So here's the deal. They got this disease down there, citrus greening. And I might have heard another podcaster talk about that a while back. And anyway, these dogs were able to sniff it out. And then, of course, you know, they can get them out of there before it becomes a real problem. But as you well know, dogs can also sniff out disease in human as well.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that they're most known for is urinary tract infections, blood sugar, cancer. Oh, COVID-19. Oh, so they're able to smell the sweet and sour sniffles. Well, dogs have 40 times the receptors in their nose, and bears have like more than anybody.
I didn't know that about bears.
Yeah, bears have more sensory sense. They have a better sense of smell than anything on the planet, as I understand it. But I mean, you got dogs that are able to sniff all this stuff out. But I was calling that good news that dogs are capable of this. But why on earth are they even having that problem in the citrus place?
I want to know what happened to, like, where did this thing come? Where did it come from?
No, why is it there in the first place? It's because they have a monocrop.
Right. Yeah.
That's why they have it.
Right.
But nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to address those issues. When you have a monocrop, I am telling you, it will always be this way. When you have a monocrop, you're always going to have fundamental problems because that's not how nature does it. That's not the way you see God designed it. So whenever you have a monocrop, these are the problems you're going to bring in. So you got to bring in disease sniffing dogs because clearly, you know, we're doing everything backwards.
Right.
We're doing everything wrong. And this is why you should, instead of a I mean, you may love one particular apple tree, but it's foolish to put a bunch of them together because all you need is one bad whatever come in and then they're all gone. Or, but when you have a diversity out there, which is what you see in nature, because nature doesn't just put everything stumped all together at once. There was a guy on with the Regenerative Agriculture podcast, and he was a citrus grower down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fascinating to listen to. I was listening to it actually on the way coming back from the Stockman Grass Farmer Conference. And I was listening to this citrus grower, and he's talking to John Kemp, and he's like, all these problems did not exist years ago. And his dad, he was talking about how his dad knew as a grapefruit grower, he was one of the guys growing the grapefruits down there, that with all the games that they were playing, that he knew with all the drugs that were coming out, he was just a good old boy farmer, and he's asking critical questions of these, and everybody dismissed him because he was just a, you know, everybody wants to say, oh, he's a stupid farmer or whatever the case may be. Well, it turns out he was the only one that when blight came through or whatever the case was, he was the only one that had a crop and everybody else didn't when they all signed on to this stuff. But that's why this stuff is happening in the first place, because that is not the way nature does it. What were you going to say?
Also, look at the damage that they've done to the soils. Like, you can't destroy your soils through chemicals and expect to have anything left. Like, you have completely destroyed the soils. And then on top of that, you put in a crop. All it takes is one small thing to wipe it out. Like,
and it happens. I mean, it, you know, that's why I have a reluctance. I mean, and it's not just your plant life out there. It, to me, it extends itself to everything else too. That's why even among our animals, like let's say chickens, for example, we don't have just one kind of chicken, right, out there. And even though I'm looking to do some really cool stuff with those breast birds, even though I love the meat of them, I've eaten the meat. I love everything so far that I'm told about these birds. I'll never know for sure until I try it for at least four seasons and see how they do. But the real truth of it is I'm reluctant to have a flock of any one bird. Because let's just say that, I mean, right now we have a hodgepodge. We don't even know what they are.
But it's like the rooster. Right. It's like that with any, like the strongest dogs are the mutts. It's not a specific breed, because when you breed that much, there are genetic weaknesses that are introduced. So our sheep, we don't have one single breed of sheep. The sheep that we have are Katahdin, St. Croix, who knows what else is in there. So I think that's with everything. Like, you have strength when you have diversity.
Well, it's like Joel always says, and I think a lot of people, I don't know why they don't get it when he says it, because there's other people out there that I think are critical of him for saying it, but he's like, dude, I'm not worried about the type of breed of pig, yeah, or cow or whatever. I'm looking for the right phenotype, right, for my property.
Right.
And that's what we should all be looking for. So if you don't go out there looking for some designer cow because you think it's cool or neat or whatever the case may be.
I think that's where people get hung up, is like the newest, that they get hung up on breeds for whatever reason. And instead of just looking for the best thing that suits their situation, it's like they force a breed onto their situation when it might not be the best.
Right. And we see it over and over and over again. It's really, yeah. And honestly, going right back to what Joel says, man, I am trying to breed, even though I really want to give these breasts a shot, for a whole bunch of reasons, because in this time we live in, the thing is, I am trying to select for the best for my property. Whether it isn't, you know, let's say it's a Katahdin sheep you got out there. Well, as you and I know, and as we're finding out, the Katahdin breeds aren't necessarily the best for these mountains. And why?
Because they're too big.
Yeah.
They have too much length. They have too much height. And when you're nursing twins and when you're going up and down the mountain, if you can't hold, we need a sheep that is more compact than a Katahdin.
That can hold its condition.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we're working on, you know, we're bringing in some other genetics this winter and or in the fall. Well, we'll have to figure out exactly when that's going to be, but we're going to bring in some new genetics where we're going to get them lower to the ground. And I mean, which, you know, you got to play with these things. You know, it may work for Joe Blow a state away, but it may not work for you in your environment. So don't necessarily get hung up on this breed or that breed. Get what works for you. And like Joel says, you work on the phenotype that works for your area. Don't get caught up in these, well, I got to have this pig, or I got to have this sheep, I got to have this cow, I got to have this chicken, man. Figure out what works there, because it's not going to be the same. And it could be different 30 minutes down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, just depending on even like in our case, like the topography of our land. Yeah, we could do Katahdins if this weren't up the side of a mountain all
right,
the time.
Right. If we were south of here in like Hendersonville or areas where it's much flatter, yeah, we could run a bigger sheep, but we're asking them to go, like, we have 1,000-foot change in elevation from the bottom of our property to the top. So we're asking them to climb up some pretty steep spots.
Yeah. I mean, it's, but going right back to this whole thing, I know we went a little sideways, but it's important. I mean, this is stuff people really need to hear. All right. With that, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, number of lawyers employed. The GDP, or gross domestic product, is a fundamentally flawed metric to measure the health of a society. It only measures economic activity. So if a tornado wipes out a whole village, the GDP goes up because of all the subsequent transactions, insurance claims, construction costs, hospital bills, and funerals. I have a much simpler metric that measures trust. Trust is a result of abundance. Fear is a result of scarcity. We use lawyers because we don't trust each other. We are afraid someone is going to take something from us. And lawyers use language only other lawyers understand, and then they even argue about their own language, charging you the whole time. Bill Mollison said, "You don't worry about the accuracy of a pound of grapes when there is 100 pounds of grapes lying on the ground." Permaculture is all about creating abundance to reinvest into the planet and people. There is an inherent duty of care, but more importantly, it comes from a place of love and abundance, not fear and scarcity. We fear losing something if we don't believe we can make any more. But if you know you can always create more, you need not fear losing anything. An abundant permaculture world has no need for lawyers or agents of fear. A metric that measures trust is a metric that measures a healthy, abundant society. Bill also said, "Stupid is to grab what you can. Intelligence is to grow so much there is no need to grab anything." You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog right there. And I'm wearing one of his shirts right now. Boy, is he knocking it out of the park every single time?
Yeah, he always does. And that's what I think. That's what the media, that's what everybody wants to keep us in, is this state of fear. And like, I'm just working to not live in that state. And I wish other people could see that's exactly where they want us, in a constant state of lack and fear.
Well, and then as far as that lack and the fear and the mistrust, like he was talking about, this is exactly what they've sown out there. And that's going right back to what I was saying in the very beginning about this Kansas group, is you don't see that. You don't, man, there is something really special going on out there. I'd hope to, I'm definitely going to unpack it. I checked the email, and it looks like Tag's going to be able to come on. So we're going to talk about the special stuff that's going on out there, because, yeah, obviously, no matter who you're dealing with, you're going to have some bad apples that show up in a bunch. It's always going to happen. No two ways about that. But there's also a lot of good going on out there. And then let me address that part also about what Eric's discussing with abundance. In this permaculture abundance, y'all, we weren't even on this property 3 years, and we had to give away 3 pigs. It didn't cost us anything outside of the initial purchase, which was like $50 for the pigs.
Right.
I mean, we had to give them away, and then we gave away another one prior to that. We gave away all the chickens because our freezers were full. I mean, all the chickens that we processed, anybody that wanted to take away chicken, they took it away with them. It's in these systems, and this is why I think, I'll put it this way. I got to talk about it. Right now, if you talk to a lot of the other people that are doing content on YouTube, whether it's Danny and Wanda down at Deep South Homestead, whether, well, I better not say all the names, but I know a number of people that do this work, and they try to put out good work. And you'll find out that unless you're in this, if you're anywhere in the regenerative agricultural space, you are being suppressed like nobody's business, despite the fact that we're in the middle of a homestead tsunami right now. The reason why the powers that shouldn't be don't want you to know how to be able to give away three pigs.
Yeah, look what videos they recommend and they push.
Right. I mean, like ever since you had, look, I'll just name names, man. The Max, they used to do homesteading and they used to do a good job at it. Well, they realized they weren't growing real quick. So they said, okay, let's get into this fear game, even though they know nothing about it. They have no background in it. And it's fear, fear, fear. Doug and Stacy. They used to do really great, good work online. And I don't know about Stacy, but it's Doug, it seems. I mean, they changed it up because they wanted to keep growing. And as long as you push this fear narrative, which is only feeding into the very thing, I know folks are going to say, well, you shouldn't name names, but look, man, the gloves are off. I'm not playing games anymore. I know exactly what I would have to do to get 1 million subscribers overnight. I'm just not going to sell my soul for it. And honestly, it's never been about that anyway. It was about to build this kind of community that I just witnessed in Kansas, but to do it online and then ultimately in person. And it's impossible to do that when everybody is working from a spirit of fear. It's fear sown all throughout the zeitgeist.
Fear, yeah, fear and scarcity. Like there's just not enough for everybody, and everybody needs to be like just afraid and... Yeah.
And the thing that gets me is that a lot of times when I'm talking to lay people that are getting into this space, I'm telling them, well, I had to give away three pigs, and nobody ever wants to know, well, how did you do it? Not everybody, but I mean, like I said, we raise our chickens. We raise our layers for free. We raise our meat birds for free. We raise our ruminants for free. We raise our pigs for 21 cents a pound. And we're showing you ways that are easy to replicate. If I can do it in DeKalb, Texas, you can't tell me that you can't do it anywhere else, because it can be done. And the last thing the powers that shouldn't be, the last thing they want us to, that they want everybody to see is that these things are possible and they're easy. Think about this. This is why I want to do, look, I'll just let the jack out of the box right now. The reason I want those breast birds is because I know they're popular right now. And judging by what I've heard and seen from people I trust in this space, these birds could be a game changer for the ones that are getting into this space that might need to provide food for a community. One chicken tractor on steroids with those birds could easily produce all of the, I mean, not just all of the eggs, but all of the meat several families could use. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just one system.
Meat, eggs, compost. Like it's the whole system.
That one system that Jeff Lawton invented with those birds would be a game changer on another planet. And that's why I want to do it. Not because I know that the video is going to be suppressed, but I know that the right people will find it. And so what does that do? It eliminates this scarcity mindset that we all have. Because you don't need a whole lot of land. When we were back doing this stuff, I mean, we were doing it in very, I mean.
But there's also a static chicken on steroids. Like, there's also a static.
Yeah, that's exactly what I intend to do.
Right. So it's not like you have to have a bunch of land. You could do it in an urban backyard.
Yes, you could do it absolutely positively in a static place. And you can scale this thing down. I mean, Eric's proven that in spades. Jeff Lawton's proven it in spades. Where it could be an urban chicken tractor on steroids. And now it takes, and you can do this where you're getting yourself, yeah, chicken tractor on steroids requires more work out of you. Okay, do you think most of us in America could use a little more of a workout? I think so. But you're providing all the meat and the eggs and the compost you could possibly use. I mean, you don't lose. But that's my point, is that going right back to what Eric said, is that these systems, or you don't need to change anything. They're already revolutionary. It is absolutely positively revolutionary, and the powers that shouldn't be don't want you to know about it. So, folks, this is why we're asking y'all. Go out there. We're putting out this stuff look, we don't, Michelle, do we make any money on YouTube?
No.
No, we don't make any money on YouTube, despite what people tend to think. No, we don't make money on YouTube. And there's a whole lot of YouTubers out there in this space right now that ain't making money. Unless you're going to engage in the salacious nonsense.
Yeah, and the fear-based, which, yeah, we're not going to do. Which also, fear keeps you paralyzed and immobile, and you don't do anything, and you have to break out of it. And if you are intent on finding solutions, if you're intent on finding a way, then you'll figure it out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, I had a topic planned for this show, but I'm just going to save that for the next show, and we'll go into the Q&A. But before we do that, EMP Shield, y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Just like with Redemption Shield, no advertiser comes on this show because they panhandled to me. No, it's me finding a product that I know that works. I reach out to them, and then I make deals with them. So EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Look, things jump off. You ain't going to the club. What are you going to do? You're going to go to your house. You're going to go to your bug out place. And, you know, if you got something on your house, let's say if you got an EMP shield on your main service coming in. All right. Let's say lightning hits it. Well, find me another company out there that's going to cover you for 25 G's. Nope. Doesn't exist. So EMP shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Like I said, I had a, you know, that's the cool thing about doing this show, especially with you, honey, or with William, is that I can call an audible anytime. I don't have to do the main topic. I mean, it's a good main topic, but I'll save it for next time. So we'll go right into the Q&A because that stuff is, you know, people have questions out there, man. And that's really where I want to make sure I, you know, if it's at all possible, I want to make absolutely sure that we get to these folks. All right. So, yeah, Janice, she said, I received your last bone saw. So thank you very much. And let me jump down to the bottom. She says, I would still appreciate your thoughts on balking 14 comfrey. I have a large plant ready to divide this fall, but it seems larger than the balking 4 I see in your videos. Any thoughts? I'm slowly working on a redesign towards a permaculture model for a suburban farm. Thank you, Michelle. Thanks to you, Michelle, William, for the encouragement and information you always provide. In Christ, peace, Janice. Thank you so much. And prayers for your steadfast faith. Oh, well, man, I love the way she ended that. What do you know about balking 14?
Balking 14, if you're going to feed it to your livestock, it is more bitter. So your chickens and rabbits, they're probably not going to eat it. So that's the main reason we don't grow the balking 14. It's just not as palatable to livestock as the balking 4 is.
What about, do you know any, because I've never dealt with that before. Have you ever, do you know anything about dividing it or propagating it?
Balking 14? No, I don't. I would have to look into that.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Janice. I'm not an expert on balking 14. And like Michelle said, it seems like we get all the upside and none of the downside of the balking number 4. So that's why we basically stick with that. Sorry, I don't have a better answer for you. But anyway, Angela Stovner, we had the pleasure of meeting her. She sent me a picture of her sister, her little girl, and Michelle. Very sweet lady. And we hear from her quite a bit. So she said, I just wanted to send these to y'all. It was nice to be able to attend the event, meet y'all, and learn hands-on. Hope one day to live out that way. Then it'd be easier to attend the upcoming event. And for all the other reasons, say a prayer for tomorrow's Caleb House event, which I think might have already occurred by now. Yeah, I'm sure it has. So glad Bill was able to help out the child and the mama. Love, peace, and blessings. Yeah. Yeah. So that was in response to the one I did about selfless people. And, yep. You know, she seems like a pretty doggone selfless person herself. So sorry I wasn't able to talk about your event as much as I would have liked. If you do another one, please let me know and I will try to do a better job of it. So we got one here from, oh, cool, Amy and Don. Great event at the Jamboree. My husband and I learned so much and had some great conversations. Thanks for sharing how you spent your birthday gift. Oh, yeah, money well spent. You are the selfless one. Well, thank you very much, Amy. Let's keep expanding his kingdom. May God bless you and all, Amy and Don. Yeah, it was a joy to meet them, and they don't live far from us. So, yeah, I mean, it was cool, man. For my birthday, I try to give away something. So I gave you something on my birthday. Yeah.
Do you want me to talk? Is that my cue to talk about it?
Well, you know you want to, so knock yourself out.
So it was a horizontal hive. I have been wanting to transition to horizontal hives for years, but we just haven't had the resources, like the time to put into figuring it out and building the horizontal hives. So yeah, you got me one and I'm excited to get it transferred over. It just seems like we actually had someone send us the horizontal hive books a while back and I've been reading them and it just looks like a better way to keep bees.
Well, to hear Adam tell it, Adam Martin, need to get him on the show too, yeah. Man. He's real good at all this stuff. And he's a really, really good communicator as well. Yeah, I need to reach out to Adam. Anyway, for my birthday, I tried to give away a compost, you know, how to make compost on my birthday. I tried to give away, and I gave away the birthday money. I didn't tell everywhere it went, but honestly, it went to some pretty, I think you'd be pretty proud of where it all went, Amy and Don. So I can't thank y'all enough. And it was your gift. I mean, you guys are, there are so many awesome and selfless people out there. And that's what you run into at these events. Yeah. You really do. I mean, yeah, you're going to run across your errant witch from time to time, but I'll be dealing with that decisively in the future. I can guarantee you that. But yeah, it's always a pleasure, Amy and Don. So check this out. Grandma Bernie, she says, your show at the Biltmore Blacksmith was chronic. I don't know what that means, but
I'm going to have to get William on here so he can.
That's Grandma saying it was chronic. I don't know what that means, but it sounds pretty good.
Her grandkids have been teaching her how to talk.
She said, yeah, she said, there's something there for your family with this Biltmore series. Anyway, she really dug the whole, she said, bless your old house. So basically she was really digging, that episode with the blacksmith and yeah, I'm sorry, y'all, I got all choked up on that thing again, but truth of it is, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't. And I'm glad we edited out some of, cause man, I got really, really choked up, man, because I'll be honest with you, when I'm out that, we were there for very different reasons. Okay. I'll just tell them right now. So Michelle, you asked me what I wanted to do for my birthday a while back. And
I think this was last year.
It was last year's birthday present.
We just now got around to doing it.
Yeah, celebrating last year's birthday this year. They had this thing. Honestly, there was an art exhibit out there I really wanted to see last year, but it was something from Da Vinci or something like that. I think it was. Was that right?
I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, no way I wanted to miss that. So, but I did. And so we got around to doing it. But honestly, I've been examining some very esoteric topics. I mean, I know a lot of people with their spare time, they might go out there and they watch NFL or what. Look, I don't do those things. So, and I have no desire, especially when you know all the games are rigged and all that other stuff. I mean, I just have, if I go to any sporting event, honestly, honey, I want to go to a local high school football game. I want to go to the local college football game.
Or lacrosse. I'll go to the lacrosse.
I'll go to one of those. I'll have a good time at that, but I don't want to go to a NFL game, and honestly, I was big into MMA and all that good stuff. I just don't have time for it. So I spend my spare time, which isn't much, studying certain topics. One of them being, I wanted to examine this Tartaria thing, the mud flood and all these other things. I don't yet have a position on any of it, but given how much we've been lied to about our history, I wanted to at least go out there. Now, when we were there at the Biltmore the last time, there was a security lady that told us that they had all these underground tunnels that are, that lead all over the place.
All over.
That go all the way up to Vance Monument. And I don't know if she, and it's like not, she said these tunnels are so big, and these are tunnels like from way back. Well, folks, if you know anything about this sort of thing, when you talk about tunnels and old buildings and stuff like that, there's a lot of really weird things that happen underground. And so I went there partially to see that. And then also to see that the Halloween room that it used to be called the Halloween room, they changed the name of it. It did not fit at all. They're telling us, well, the last time we were there, they said that this room, it had all of these creepy paintings that they said were done by the guests that were in the house. So this last time we went, they covered all that up.
Yeah, it was different.
Nothing. They covered it up. It wasn't there. And I wonder if a number of people had said the same thing, like, man, this is just downright creepy. Yeah, it just
doesn't even make sense.
It didn't even, it was like, okay, you have this opulent house, like none other, but you got this weird...
In a certain time period.
Yeah.
And then you have this Halloween room that's like random and bizarre that does not even fit the time period.
In the basement.
Right, yeah.
And so you're asking yourself, hold on, what went on in this room?
That's exactly what...
What really happened in this room? And then since that time, I wanted to go back and examine this thing again, but lo and behold. Well, like I said, I can appreciate some of the architecture. There's a lot of weird, strange things around there if you look, if you know what you're looking for. But honestly, when we were on our way out, we came across Steve, the blacksmith, and man, that was such a joy. It was like, it was a breath of fresh air. It really was. Mm-hmm. And then come to find out there's another 6,000 acres of the agriculture that I would have liked to have seen. Yeah, I can appreciate the architecture and all that good stuff, but I'm like, okay, you got this opulent house for three people? Really? Wow. But anyway, thank you so much. So we got here from Jack. He says, hey, Billy, I really enjoy your podcast. I started a small farm in Virginia 2 years ago, and I've been slowly implementing permaculture practices on what used to be row crop. Anyways, are you going to have any comfrey and bone sauce in stock soon? The deer are having all they can eat buffet on my apples I planted last fall. Okay, so I'll be honest with you, Jack, and a number of others. Yeah, we basically took it offline. Well, we let it run out as far as we sold it out. I haven't had a chance to make any. Hopefully I can. I'm going to try to get some burning tomorrow, but I'm still playing catch up from doing these festivals for the last three weeks.
The comfrey's back online. Just the bone sauce isn't.
Yeah. Hopefully we can have it online tomorrow. We shall see. I'm going to really try to push for that. I know a lot of people are asking for it and it's getting that time. So I'm going to do everything I can to make that happen, but it's touch and go right now with all the things that are having to get done, but I'm going to do everything I can to try to get that out there. But I thank you and everybody else. You know, there's a reason why I don't spend a whole lot of time advertising bone sauce, because honestly, the stuff gets sold out just about as fast as I can make it. And for those that are new to this podcast, it's basically a deer repellent we make here, and it's not a panacea, but you can't find anything better. I guarantee that. But we've had incredible success, and a number of others have too. All right, so let's see what we got here. Sebastian says, love the show. Okay, you're going to like this one. I follow you from Portugal. Brother, I'm just trying my luck. I've been trying to get someone from the U.S. to mail me some kudzu root. I know it's illegal to mail, but I know you're a rebel. Hey, Sebastian. Yeah.
No, that's funny.
Hey, bro.
I wonder what he's going to do with it.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm not going to do is go to jail over some kudzu.
Go to jail for sending kudzu to.
What are you in for? What's you in for? Mailed some kudzu over to Portugal. No, bro. I mean, I guess I'm a different kind of rebel, man. You might have to make a road trip, bro. I'm sure you can get some back in your suitcase that just snuck in there if you want it that bad, but I don't know why you want it, but knock yourself out, my man. Okay, so we got one from Chris here. He's saying, I got a question about hay sourcing without Grazon. Try as I might, I cannot find any hay for my sheep/garden that hasn't been sprayed with Grazon. I'm thoroughly disgusted at the thought of using Grazon sprayed hay. I totally understand. So far, I've listened to several podcasts by Jim Garrish on kicking the hay habit. Watched Danny's Deep South, where he gives some explanation about some duck wenting without so much solution other than 18 months. Basically, the question is this. Have you had any experience or suggestions with Grazon mitigation in hay that has been composted? I've read and seen numerous articles that it takes 18 months for Grazon to break down. Yeah, Chris, we've had one experience that I know of with it, and it was awful. And through the composting, yes, through composting, you can get rid of it, but it takes time. Now, as far as how much time, I don't know, because I don't know that we've tested any. I don't know that we have the means to test whether or not the grazon. Thing is, you're not going to get rid of grazon in the composting process. You're just going to tie it up. You're essentially going to make it inert, but it doesn't go away. But it does. It might as well go away because it's just locked up. I mean, this is so awesome how the good Lord set everything up, is that all these things don't go away. They just become unavailable. Okay. If that makes sense. 18 months. I'll be honest with you. I haven't examined it that long, but I know that we destroyed the stuff out in our high tunnel because of it. And that was just because we got lazy one time and used some stuff out of a bag, had grazon in it, and it killed everything. I mean,
I'll have to look and see if there's a grazon specific information out there in the, like, just so we can have like a reference or provide some data.
Maybe through the soil food web online thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have access to some, we have access to certain information. It might not be available out there for the regular public, but maybe we can try to find that out and get back to you, but I don't have a date on it. It's awful stuff, man. And frankly,
because the one thing that I am concerned about is it slowing down the composting process, kind of like dewormers do, or you know what I mean?
Well, it'll still compost eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Like if anybody's had any experience with like,
it'll get there. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah.
It'll wind up, but I don't have a good time for you, man. I really wish I did. Well, like I said, we didn't get into the main topic, but we'll save it for next time. But like I said, we've gone quite a bit over, and look, y'all, thank you so much. And till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive. Just a carbon copy, you sitting at Manicotti. Yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they wanna build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. Like a kamikaze, got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They wanna push me to the center like a cell, they wanna spin up at the center of the next is me. They want me to battle.